Overeater. It's a real honor and privilege to be asked to share with you today. And I'm enormously grateful to be abstinent from, you know, compulsive overeating. And in my case, restricting. I went through a whole lifetime cyclical thing of losing vast amounts of weight and then putting vast amounts of weight back on, and sort of yo-yoed through the whole kind of hellish cycle of thinking that I could fix myself with food, either by overeating or by restricting. And the thing that made it so difficult for me was that it was only food, if you know what I mean. And I had no understanding until I came into OA, and my home group is a big book study meeting, actually. And by week after week, reading, hearing sections of the big book, I started to re-educate my mind. And I was able, through identification and through the knowledge that is in within the big book, to start to see that I'm, as it's been said before me, my relationship to food is different to normal eaters. Yes, I don't use food or food behaviors, that would be in my case restricting, I don't use those in the way that, you know, most people say they put a bit of weight on, they go on a diet and they lose weight. Yeah, that's not what's happening for me. What's happening for me is that I'm using food to change the way I feel. And it says in the big book, it's really, really, I mean, like Claire said, you try and condense down to, you know, the significance of the big book in my life in 10 minutes is nigh impossible. But what I'll try and do is read a couple of things from the big book, and hopefully they'll speak volumes in themselves. And I think this is one piece in particular. So the fact is that most, says I'm going to use alcoholic, but we could substitute food, you know, just because I just think it's easier if I read it out in its original form. The fact that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. And in my case, just substituting, I am without defense against the first compulsive mouthful. It's that simple. Yeah. And it's very baffling, as that piece says, because the mind of the food addict is different to the mind of someone that doesn't suffer from addiction. And the book is really clear that it's a threefold illness. It talks about how it's a physical illness, it's a mental illness, and it's a spiritual illness. And they're all interrelated. They're all interwoven into each other. Yeah. And so this whole concept, and that's what I really want to focus on, is why don't I have defense over the first mouthful? You know, this probably is the most significant thing that I've learned from the big book, if I'm honest, you know, because you would have thought, especially if you're new, I'm sure you can identify with this. You would have thought that, you know, the amount of times that I've gone on diets and I've starved myself and I've lost, you know, 40, 50 pounds. And then to my amazement, there comes this idea comes into my, I'm fitting into all those slim clothes and I'm semi feeling good about myself, but I still think I'm fat, even though I've lost 50 pounds. It's insane. But then at some point, there's going to come this idea into my mind that it's a good idea to start eating compulsively, that it's a really good idea to start to change the way I feel through food. So that aspect of where it says in the big book that we see that the principal problem of the food addict, the alcoholic, as it says in the book, is that the problem resides in the mind. the fact that I cannot bring into, I have no agency in my mind, I have no will sufficient to stop myself alone commencing the cycle, the addictive cycle of compulsive overeating. Yeah, that's really my problem. That's the gateway to starting to overeat and start binging again. As if that wasn't bad enough, once the food is in my body, in my case, you know, my allergic foods are white flour and sugar. Once white flour and sugar are in my body actually, rather than feeling satisfied by that mouthful, it makes me hungrier. I'll eat an entire meal when I'm binging, and by the end of it, I'm actually still hungry, and I'm hungrier and hungrier. And the big book is really clear and very helpful that it says that not only are we mentally different, but we're physically different too. Our bodies react differently to these substances, which means that once that allergic substance, when the big book talks about allergy, it's just saying an unusual reaction to something. You know, there's a lot of people who don't have food addiction problems who can eat a slice of cake, and they might even eat half of it and then leave it and go, that's kind of a bit much for me. You know, not me. If you put a slice of cake, if I decide today to eat a slice of cake, almost guaranteed I'll eat the whole cake in one sitting. But if it doesn't happen tonight, it's definitely happening tomorrow. The horrors will be on me. I'll be in that terrible place where I start craving those foods, and I'm absolutely powerless. And that brings me to the crux, I believe, of the problem, which is that underlying the mental and the physical illness, as it's said in the big book, is the spiritual illness. It says in the doctor's opinion that our natural setting as a food addict is to be irritable, restless, and discontent. And in my case, that involves anxiety, depression, low self-esteem, self-hatred, and more than anything else, self-centered fear. And it goes on to say here that, where is it? Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later places us in a position to be hurt. And that, for me, encapsulates the second part of step one. In the book, it says we admitted we're powerless over food, our addiction, and our lives have become unmanageable. It's my belief from my reading of the book and what I've heard people share, that what is the dynamo underneath the illness, what leads me to that first compulsive mouthful if I'm not looking after myself, is this feeling, and I think we can all identify with this if we're not working our program, where I'm just consumed with self-centered fear. It's overwhelming. And it becomes so intolerable, but there comes a point.
1 minute.
Thank you. There comes a point when I have no power to pick up, because it's the only solution I have if I'm in self-will, which is to use food to change the way I feel. But the beautiful thing about this program is that if I'm prepared to hand my will and my life over to the God of my own understanding, it doesn't have to be anyone else's concept of God. That's the stunning thing about this fellowship. If I can find, and in my case, that higher power is love. It really is. It's the love I feel in the rooms. It's the love that I feel in my family now that I'm in recovery. It's the love I feel in my fellows. And it's the love that I try and give in my life to others, you know? if I can hand my will and my life over to that power greater than myself, I get out of self-will. Thank you. And then that power defends me against that first compulsive mouthful. And that for me has been the only thing that has been the defining factor in changing my life, restoring me to sanity and keeping me abstinent. Nothing else worked. So for that reason, I'm enormously grateful to be here today. And above all else, I'm enormously grateful for what I've learned from the Big Book. Thank you so much.